So I don't know if you saw the news, but someone tried to shoot former President Trump on Saturday.
I did see that news.
A lot of people had a lot of questions about how the Secret Service could let something like that happen. There were a lot of folks wondering, you know, how did a 20-year-old with a rifle get on top of a building like a few hundred yards from where a former president was speaking and manage to get a shot off at him? Mm. Well, thanks to some great reporting from CBS, we now have insight into what the Secret Service was talking about at the time that all this was happening. And I just want to read you an excerpt from this verbatim.
Okay.
So the snipers who were supposed to be watching the whole thing did, in fact, spot the kid with the rifle ahead of time. And according to this, it says the snipers called in with information that he had a backpack and said he was walking towards the back of the building. Amongst themselves, the snipers discussed the hypothetical contents of the backpack, with one remarking on Crook's nerdy appearance, "Look at this kid. You know it's just full of Slim Jims and Magic the Gathering cards."
Mm.
The conversation then turned to discussion of the recent Old West-themed magic set, Outlaws of Thunder Junction, followed by one sniper asking another if he had seen any of the spoilers for Bloomburrow, an upcoming set featuring a menagerie of anthropomorphic animals. The snipers then realized they had lost track of Crook's whereabouts, and an argument ensued amongst them regarding who was responsible for the lapse.
Oh.
I have been unable to think about anything else for like 3 days.
I think that goes to show that Magic the Gathering really is evil.
Yeah, no, at this point, I'm kind of anti-magic at this point.
Oh my god. Well, good thing we did our due diligence and explained why it was so evil on our prior episode. But why don't we get started with this episode?
That sounds great.
We dive into the deep blue sea to catch fish, fight pirates to the death, and pour the perfect cup of tea in Dave the Diver.
Buzz, storm of buzz, and we're going to tell you about how we saved the world.
Welcome one, welcome all to this episode of Storm Buds, the video game variety talk show with a, you know, slight bias towards Final Fantasy XIV. And in today's episode, we are covering Dave the Diver as part of our summer vacation July, as well as the third part of our discussion of Final Fantasy XIV Dawn Trail. I have kept up with those timestamps for two episodes, and I will continue on with a third. I am your high school rifle club president of light, Jerome Barbatsis, joined by my bad faith actor of light, Alexander Hamruck. Ask a question, but only for the sake of persuasion and not for the sake of bettering society, Alexander.
I mean, shouldn't we be able to eat parrots?
Wow. That's, you know what? That's thought-provoking and horrible. Welcome again, everyone. Welcome all to Storm Buds. We're starting now. This is a starting now.
We're starting now.
We're starting,
yep,
right
here.
The fuck now. We're in. Dave the Diver. Quick summary.
This game is charming.
All right. Dave the Diver is a Dave the Diver is a 2023 video game. Busy ass year. Published and developed by a studio called Mint Rocket, which is a subsidiary of a Korean super mega giant Nexon. It is a pretty double A budget game wearing indie games clothing.
I started to pick up on that more as I was playing it.
Yeah.
I was like, this is maybe like one of the most video games we played on this podcast.
It is definitely a video game as a video game. It's an action adventure and action adventure game for about half of it, and then a resource and restaurant management game for the other half of it, as you take on Dave the Diver, a notably overweight man who is super good at diving and super athletic and super strong and everything, and that's pretty much it, and it's great, and I love it as well. And he's enjoying his vacation. You are accosted by your good friend Cobra, who is rather greedy and wants to open a sushi restaurant on something called, what is it, the Blue Hole
Yeah, the blue hole. The blue hole. Is what they keep calling it.
The blue hole, which is sort of a mysterious lagoon that has opened up or recently been made, recently discovered by people.
That changes every time you dive into it.
Changes every time you dive into it. Pretty cool. So you dive into this place, you catch fish, and then you sell that fish at Bancho's restaurant. And Bancho is a tall, very standoffish, Kona-like sushi chef who is probably my favorite character.
He's the best.
He is the best. He is really, really good at sushi and terrible at everything else.
God, anytime you like research an upgrade or whatever and you get the animation of him like doing the whole like Zen meditation thing mm-hmm. until he discovers a new recipe.
It's pretty excellent. The art in this game is on its face pixel art, but it is kind of a 2D HD style game, and it's just under $10 million budget really shines in its game's visuals, because my God, it is a beautiful game. But it is now, having played for me, having played 20 or so, 10, somewhere between 10 to 20 hours, it is not at all an indie game, and I cannot believe the Game Awards nominated
like
for this.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just like, how did they fuck this up so bad? Oh, because the industry, any industry at large is out of touch with what it means
the indie category has never made a ton of sense, but it really makes no sense now with publishers like Devolver on the scene and stuff. It's just like what is an indie game anymore?
I mean, an independent game is an auteur game. It's a game that is authored and envisioned by a team that is absolutely not funded by stakeholders.
I guess.
It is definitely not dependent on anything. That's the whole point. They are independent of other people, and they are not subsidiaries. It is just kind of their own studio. But
I saw a quote about this game that was like, we had the idea to make this game to help people appreciate nature and appreciate like marine life and all of that more before, you know, climate change possibly, you know, causes a lot of damage. And you know, I think that this game is beautiful and certainly gives me an appreciation for aquatic life. Mm-hmm. I will say also, I don't have any blinders on about how like food production works or anything. I'm very aware of, you know, what goes into making it possible for me to buy chicken at the supermarket. You kill a lot of fish in this game.
You kill a lot of fish in this game. You also can capture fish, though, is another deal. You unlock your tranquilizer and net upgrades to your various guns, or your tranquilizer and net guns, and you can also, rather than just constantly kill, you can also, I mean, farm them, which is actually much worse than once you start getting into the farming and automation of production of fish. That's when you do start doing some real damage to the ecology, which is funny that it's kind of funny that there's this story-wise, there is this group of, you know, eco activists that are very on the face lampooning people that are just acting in sort of bad faith who are probably working for these corporations to shut down smaller businesses, saying, oh, we're actually trying to protect the ocean, they're just shooting grenades underwater and destroying the environment. It's like kind of funny that the game takes a position of, hey, you're actually just a small-time business, but also you're going to catch and farm every imaginable fish you can find and start a mega industry over this otherwise pristine and untouched area. So it takes a little bit of a middle ground here.
Yeah, including like the first moment I had a bit of a qualm with this game. I enjoyed this game overall. I am positive on this game. The moment where they were like, great, can you go out and kill a shark so we can make a shark's head sushi?
That,
and I was like,
give me pause.
Should I do that? I don't think I should kill a shark.
I don't think I should, but you can. Don't worry. Everything will always respawn infinitely for us in our perspective.
Yeah, because we're just a small operator. We're not big enough to damage the ecosystem.
Certainly not. The game is for me pretty excellent. I think it's ridiculous. It's completely ridiculous story-wise. The cast of characters you run into is never ending, constantly expanding, and each new and unique character adds a lot of depth and depth of the gameplay to the game. Still, like, I still am getting kind of new systems unlocked.
Really?
As I'm like
20 hours in?
Yeah, as I'm like, what, I don't know, I want to say 14, 15 days in to the damn thing. I'm like, okay, there's another there's another bespoke mechanic with other things and different ways to unlock new areas. Like, I just got new gloves that will help me pick up sea urchins and like drop boulders.
God,
on,
I need those gloves.
Yeah, I'll drop boulders on some of those like boards you see underwater that you could then open shortcuts and things like that. And there's still so much more. I'm only in chapter 2 of the story.
I am not out of chapter 1 yet.
It's a ridiculously big game for its price.
I mean, when I said it was like one of the most video games, what I mean is just like everything in this feels tuned. You've got all these mechanics, and you've got these fish catching, and then the selling of the sushi, and then the decorating of your space, and the hiring of people, and it's all these little tightly like interlocking systems that add up to this thing where it's like there's a lot going on, but it's all very tightly nestled together into this big mechanical apparatus. And I think it's cool. But that's the bit that maybe makes it feel the least indie to me, is that
it's the production of this game is enormous. The scale is enormous.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like they just didn't have to make any cuts
exactly
to this game. It is a very complete, replete, and there's an abundance of fun and toys and detail and iteration on existing mechanics and things like that. Like when I unlocked night diving as well, like, it's just absolutely stunning. It is so stunning. But, you know, beware. That was probably my favorite unlock, was night diving. But my God, is everything aggro as fuck at night. It's pretty scary. And this game does a good job, I think, of conveying the depth of the sea and the awe of it. I particularly do have a little bit of I'm not exactly a fan of the deep sea or the wide ocean and fish.
It's bad down there.
And things and scary stuff like that. And this game does kind of, I think it does a good job, because at times it's kind of scary. I don't like it. I see a tiger shark kind of coming in off the corner of the screen, and I'm like, oh no, I don't want to. There's such a wide array of menus and mechanics and systems that have their own systems of rewards. There's weapons that you can, there's weapon trees that you can unlock and upgrade Monster Hunter style. There's collectathons. There's collectathons. There's trading cards. There's
the trading card system.
Yeah, there's photo mode. There's the farming mechanic I mentioned, and there's decorating the restaurant. There's the hiring managing system,
it is cool to see, like, again, $10 million budget,
yeah,
not a small operation, but as a game that has sort of like a very limited scope of its visual fidelity, right? It's pixel art, it's sort of like, it's simple 3D models. It doesn't look like Red Dead 2, right? Like, you know,
Some of those pixel animations, those frame by frame pixel animations, are probably harder to make.
it looks incredible, but by not being kind of like a polygon pusher, but still having a lot of oomph behind it, they were able to put all of it into everything else. It's a great looking game. Like, I just mean that it's literally like not pushing some sort of like massive fidelity load, and it just like, yeah, everything else feels incredibly tightly balanced.
So there's just too much to talk about this game. So I guess we'll just ask each other what we liked and what other things we liked and didn't like about this game. Do you have like a particular favorite character of the list of people in your contacts that you thought that you really thought you wanted to always like get more of?
I mean, it's Boncho. Like, he's the guy. I'm trying to think of who
Boncho
else.
Is so good. Boncho is he's the sushi chef. He's on the cover art. He's the tall black guy with the sunglasses that he never takes off and the headband. And he is just completely super, super serious. And he doesn't ever stop being serious. Like any other certain characters we might be talking about later. But he doesn't ever stop. He doesn't, like, his quirks don't, you know, go away as the story goes on. He is also tasked with kind of running this social media platform, and he is like a fish out of water.
He has no idea what he's doing.
He's taking selfies with where like his bald head is in the bottom corner. All his photos are out of focus, and over time, like people start liking his photos more and more because of it.
That's so good. The other one I like, who I don't remember his name, but the weapons guy, the guy
Cobra, I believe.
Is right? is that Cobra? Yeah,
I think so.
Mm-hmm. Like the first.
No,
time...
not Cobra. Cobra's the selling guy. What's his name? It's Judd or Cud or something.
Something like that. The first time I got a weapons animation or a weapons upgrade, and he does the thing where he dons like the gloves so that he can like puppet you in order to like carry out the weapon like vicariously through your body. I also laughed out loud.
Oh, Duff. Like the beer.
Duff, there we go.
Okay, never. That's sorry to Duff. That's probably the person we talked to the most outside of the restaurant. Actually, no. The person we talked to most outside of the restaurant is Dr. Bacon, who is incredible.
Dr. Bacon's also great.
He's an archaeologist, and the main story kind of this game, sort of, that they're hinting at, maybe there's more to this, but there are these sea people. As you dive, you find more relics and hints that these sea people actually exist. And Cobra is really excited about that because, of course, if this is the Blue Hole is the site where there's a mythical, ancient civilization, of course people are going to want to come to a restaurant. So he's all aboard. He makes Dave do all this stuff for this guy who is just constantly so excited about his job. He's so passionate about his work. He's like, oh, this is a great discovery. Oh, he just constantly has his jaw unhinges every time he speaks, and his arms are effectively wacky, inflatable, flailing tube man arms. I love him very much. And I also love the HR manager, Yoshie, who kind of looks like the super nanny.
Yes.
She's kind of this also very serious but different from Bansha, in that she's very serious about she's just very serious about her work as well, and doesn't let her emotions get the better of her. But there's kind of hints that she and Bansha had something in the past, but
mm-hmm.
His personality and his devotion to his work made it unmaintainable, made it not a possible relationship for them. Maybe I'm reading too much into it. I don't know. I'm not done with this whole game yet.
No, that makes sense.
She's an absolute delight every time she speaks. And the...
Gonna say also, like, the first time Dr. Bacon is like telling you about the sea people, and you get like the vision of them, mm-hmm. and they look like the little brine shrimp that you like buy as like your sea people kid, as like an 8-year-old,
in
your tank. It's really good.
There's a lot of just cheeky humor like that in this game. It's a really funny game, very well written, very well developed, like well drawn, and well gamed game. You know, good game with a lot of fun video games. In it, a particular thing I had about this game was that I was worried I wasn't going to very much care for the sushi restaurant part of it at the start, because I was like, oh my god, this is a lot of it's a very very slow and tedious thing. But pretty quickly, once you unlock the hiring system, you start to automate that restaurant management with your hires, and eventually you train those people. And honestly, my fucking cast of little freaks that run the restaurant, I love them so much. I can't imagine replacing them, but I'm probably gonna have
to
at some point.
Anybody.
I'm gonna be sad about it because I love my weird muscle man and my lazy ponytail girl and my vain chef with the fro. I love Kyoko and Raul. Don't take them away from me, even if they perform kind of bad.
Question for you.
Yeah.
Have you ever played Cook Serve Delicious?
No, but I have played Moonlighter.
Maybe sometime on the big long list of games we could play, I might say we should play like Cook Serve Delicious too sometime.
Perhaps.
Bits of the restaurant management stuff remind me of bits of that game.
This is way better than Moonlighter, by the way.
Yeah, I think this is better than Moonlighter.
But like, because the issue I had with Moonlighter is a similar game where you're doing roguelike dungeon stuff,
mm-hmm.
and then selling your loot to people. But Moonlighter is all about just like randomly guessing the price. Whereas this game sets the price. It sets the price of the sushi for you. It's a little the sushi management's a little weird. It's kind of hard to get This is a big complaint I have about this game, was that at the start, I didn't realize that by setting the menu, I'm committing resources already and ingredients already to that menu.
Oh, yeah.
Which is like annoying, because there's an option to just auto supply your fish as people order them anyway. And I think, why isn't that the default?
Oh, is that what that does?
Yes.
Oh, so, okay.
If you prepare too much fish for your menu, that fish will just be gone.
Oh.
Because the ingredients won't be fresh anymore.
So why on earth would it default to that?
I don't know. That's kind of silly. Like, anyone's just going to be able to guess how many. Just whatever. Do the auto supply. I do a couple that are, I just usually do as many expensive ones as I can, and then I auto supply some of the cheaper ones. I don't know.
Maybe I shouldn't have been just hitting maximum on every single fish I put out.
That's a bad call, because you can sell your surplus fish to help hire, train, and decorate your restaurant, and also increase your equipment gear, diving gear, so that you can go deeper and carry more stuff. Mostly carry more stuff, because once you're diving and your inventory gets full, which happens very quickly, you start to slow down to a point where you can't escape the sharks.
Dropping
barracuda, like, oh, please don't kill me.
You can find like oxygen tanks and new weapons and stuff down below but you can't find anything to do with your inventory, so like getting the inventory up as quick as possible is important.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, is there anything else you want to talk about, Dave the Diver? I've gushed a lot about this game. I'm gonna finish it. I'm invested at this point, because I love these little dorks.
I don't know. I liked it a lot more than I thought I would. You pitched me on this game, and I was like, okay, we'll see what that is. And I found myself utterly charmed by it, which is not what I was expecting. It really has a lot of personality. Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty incredible game that came out in a year of very incredible games. So if you missed it, I don't blame you, but check out Dave the Diver. It was on the summer sale, obviously, but it's still not too expensive, so put that on your list and wait for it to go on sale if you want to support Nexon.
You know,
I guess
chip them with some walking around money.
Yeah, they'll be fine, but you know, I think my life is certainly better with Dave the Diver in it. Speaking of games with a wide cast of characters that would be better off were they to be a little bit more serious, we are going to resume our talks of Dawn Trail after the break. But, you know, of course, during the break, I'm gonna leave my house, as I normally do.
You
and just,
always leave
I'm going to go
house.
Bird watching for a You're bit. Bird I need watching? A break.
You're going to go to the bird sanctuary up the street?
I'm going to go to the bird sanctuary up the street and watch birds and nothing else.
That's not a joke. We have a bird sanctuary up the street. It's great.
We do have a bird sanctuary up the street. It is, you know, it is known for cruising.
Oh, yeah, that too. So, hey, also
but
great.
It's 7:30 in the afternoon and the sun's still out. So, clearly, I'm just going to go watch birds. All right, I'll see you later.
We're gonna read some ads.
Now, how much do you like fast food?
I love fast food. I eat it like 4 times a day.
What's your favorite fast food chain?
My favorite fast food chain?
Yeah.
Probably Taco King.
Okay. Well, try again. Try a different king.
Pizza King?
Nope. Try again. New choice.
Sub King.
Nope. New choice.
Fry King?
New choice. There's only one king that reigns supreme.
That reigns supreme. What is the hint here? That Juice King. Burger King?
It is, in fact, Burger King.
It's Burger King. Okay, sure. Yeah, I got one of those near me.
And not to be outdone by McDonald's and Jujutsu Kaisen's crossover, Burger King has its own anime crossover that it is excited to announce. Burger King has teamed up with the estate of Kentaro Miura to release its Berserker King line of burgers.
Whoa! How big are those?
They are massive. Try the Guts Whopper. It's got pig in it.
I'm looking at this picture here. It comes with a real sword sticking out of it?
It absolutely comes up with a real sword sticking out of it, and it really makes you think about what it's like to be born as one who maybe able to struggle against causality, but is unable to maintain it indefinitely.
Wow, that's the eating experience I'm looking for.
Yes, so if you want a snack that is reminds you of growing up as in a mercenary band after being adopted by a motherly prostitute named Shisu, well, then look no further than Berserker King. Well,
do they have anything for the kids' meals?
They absolutely do. Try the motherly prostitute named Shisu Shake.
That'll be great
And the childish Gambino burger.
We'll take my 8-year-old cousin there for his birthday next.
The child's Gambino meals. Get it?
Yeah, I got it. No.
I'm so sorry. Oh my
God. How long does the Guts promotion at Burger King run?
I don't know, 3 weeks.
3 weeks? Dang it, we're going to miss his birthday. Okay.
But it is definitely going to end, and it's not going to end well. Hey.
Anticlimactic.
Hey, guys. Hey, I haven't seen Berserk. I don't know anything about this. I forgot that it was my week to do the ad.
If you love Berserk, I believe you. People I trust think really, really highly of that series.
Hey, guys. Please cut me some slack. Okay. Well,
go to BurgerKing.com.
Go to BurgerKing.com/storm. This sucks. Does this suck?
Walk up to your nearest Burger King counter and say you want to apply promo code STORMBUDS at checkout.
That's right. That's how we do these things. and see what happens. Hey, everyone. I didn't do my homework.
honestly, I'm looking at the copy right here. We don't know what happens. It tells us to say, see what happens. So I might go try this after we're done.
You know, and God bless my co-host for refusing to step out of the bit like I do. Like I just give up.
I think this is great.
I'm... Hey, there's a character named Pippin! All I know about Berserk is that it...
Oh, that does not look like our Pippin. It's a very different Pippin.
That is a very different Pippin. Oh, you can host a Guts party. Oh, that's a Guts party of adventurers.
Oh.
I'm just scrolling through the wiki looking for jokes.
It's the Guts party of adventurers meal at Burger King.
The God Hand.
Two Guts Whoppers.
How about the God
Hand? Three God Hand stacks of onion rings.
The God Hand me some onion rings. I just wanted to say that.
Yours is better.
Oh man, well, we're not getting sponsored by Burger King anytime soon, I don't think. Okay, well, we're back in Stormbud's land, thank God. Because I thought 7:30 was too early for cruising. Nope.
No. Oh yeah,
I was looking for birds. I didn't. Oh, the only brown birds I saw were people's assholes. What the fuck joke am I trying to make?
I don't know where you're going.
That was
with
gross.
I can't get in on this one.
And neither can I, because I don't cruise. But here's the deal. I was just out on a walk by the bird sanctuary, and it was lovely. And I was like, man, that's what I'm gonna do. That's what I'm gonna do my Stormbuds bit on. And then I couldn't follow it up.
I think this episode is great so far, and it's okay. Only going to get better because we're talking about Dawn Trail.
Man, is it? Well, this part of Dawn Trail is pretty fun, I think. Wasn't it? It's been a few weeks for me.
It's very uneven, but the high points are high.
Yeah, there's something. So this is kind of, we're going to talk about chapters 4 and 5, I think, of Dawn Trail. This is where you kind of left off. We're in the second half of the Wild West zone into... Finally, the future shit.
I think sort of just kind of part 4, because there's then part 5 and then part 6, which has way less quests, but I know it's going to take a long time.
Yeah.
We're up through the bit. I have just gotten to Solution 9 and been shown around. That's what okay. We're talking through today.
Sick. So, take us to where we ended off, right?
Well, thank God we have to do like one quest to fix this train this time.
Yeah.
We just go get some wood or whatever. And Aaronville is very in to this old-timey steam train, and he's like, wow, what a wondrous piece of machinery. And I'm just like, Aaronville, you worked in Charlion for years. You saw a spaceship take off.
Yeah, but that spaceship took off could only take off once.
That's true. The train can run over and over.
But that spaceship is no longer in use and was a huge waste of taxpayer dollars.
This world has airships and etherite crystals. It has lots of transportation technology. Okay, okay. Yeah. The actual thing they're kind of doing here, which is like, I don't know how well they're doing it. Mm-hmm. We'll see how it all kind of closes at the end. The thing they're kind of trying to do here, which I get, which is interesting, is to show that sort of like this continent is advancing technologically and like developing into the future by having things like steam trains and stuff like that. And then all of a sudden, the far future is going to crash back into it like mm-hmm. a train running the opposite direction. And that is certainly interesting.
Yeah, it certainly is interesting. We wrapped up the whole get the bracelet side quest mm-hmm. with the evil
oh god
deputy
yeah, all
guy,
that
right?
Shit. Mm-hmm.
And then we send off that train into the distance with the woman on it with her bracelet. And as we wait for the train to come back and take the next one, a giant dome of lightning appears out of nowhere. And crashes over what's the zone supposed to be called? Chocterol? No,
yeah.
That's the south of it. I can't remember the name of it because expansion is rife with proper nouns, and it is pretty easy for me to get confused. I still don't know the names of all the samurai abilities. Maybe that's a me problem, but I think there's anyway. It's not what it's called anymore is the problem. Also the problem, because it gets a new name. That whole zone gets a new name, and we'll get into it. But holy shit, Aaronville watches in the distance as his homeland is suddenly overtaken by a big dome of lightning. And we don't know anything about it. Right? Pretty much.
Pretty much. It just shows up and a whole bunch of Mass Effect looking dudes start swarming out with guns.
With guns, and they head towards Tuliolol. And I'm like, yes, burn it. Raise it to the ground. I don't like this city. I don't like it. I still don't like it. So we immediately head back to Tuliolol, and it is a battle. It's a scene of a battle.
It's being overrun. Lots of cool stuff happens here. Buckle Jaja gets to be a badass warrior.
Yeah.
Buckle Jaja the best.
He's the best. Hold on.
I'm on the Buckle Jaja train.
Let's not call him the best, okay? Let's not call him anything remotely called the best, right? There have been plenty of characters in this game that are the best. Buckle Jaja is fine.
I've staked out my territory, but we can move on from this.
Okay, great.
Anyway, the main thing here that happens is Zeralja shows up, and he is cyberpunked out.
Yeah, he certainly is. He looks a little bit older, interestingly, and is kind of gray. A little bit in the blue, but he is mm-hmm. definitely cyberpunked out, and he is on his way to talk with Galul Jaja. Have a nice, peaceful talk.
Yeah.
That's it. And the soldiers are just sort of doing their own thing. They kill a couple civilians and point their guns out, and then they take some goop out of some dead bodies. That's weird.
That's really weird.
That's weird. We notice that. We do our curious little head tilt. And then we move on. As we about approach the palace, we also look off to the left and find that woman in a glowing outfit, also cyberpunked out, who's got short chin length gray hair that I thought was blue but was gray, and also she's a lot taller than I thought she was. So that Ico prediction not looking great for me. Absolutely not. I was like, uh-oh, misread that. Oh well. And we head into the palace. What happens there?
There's a confrontation between Zeralja and Galul Jaja.
Yeah.
Which I actually did not write a ton of notes here because I was too like entranced by what was happening. Do you recall like what exactly all the stuff that happens with them? They have a really good conversation.
Was it really good?
Can't remember the details of. I thought it was really good.
Oh. Man, you probably should have written shit down because I didn't care.
Whatever.
Don't care about Zeralja. I think he's fucking awful.
I don't care about Zeralja. I do care about Galul Jaja. This whole fight here, like, they end up fighting.
I mean, and he something about legacy and betrayal. He's looking forward to this for a while and, like, yada yada, all sorts of stuff. Here's the thing. Here's my thing about Galul Jaja, right? He was so obviously, for me, flagged and set up to die.
Sure, in a big
way that I didn't really care that he did die. I think it's fine when a series tells you sort of, or shows you that somebody is going to pass on thematically with certain things, but it was a little overdone for me. And it's also not a character that we've spent a whole lot of time with, to be honest. Like we've really seen him in a couple of cutscenes, and he's charming, but like I have a difficult time being sad just because somebody else is sad, especially when I just don't have a connection with that somebody else either. Like I don't. Wuklamot, to me, this entire expansion, not this entire expansion, but like from this point on, she talks to me as if we've been best friends for our entire life.
Yeah.
And it's like, I just met you like 2 weeks ago. Like it's not. I mean,
that's kind of her thing, is sort of diving in emotionally with both feet on everything. But like,
yeah, I don't know. To me, as a person, that's always it's always kind of an ick. I've had friendships that have been very love bomby that have always crashed and burned.
Yeah,
maybe I'm just like maybe I have a trauma response to that or something. And I'm like,
No. I totally get that. And also, like, it's one of those things where this game doesn't quite delve into like human behavior in that way sometimes.
Yeah, it really doesn't. And I'm not saying it should, I'm just saying that's what it reminds me of, and it feels it to me, this kind of confrontation rang very hollow for me. As far as a level 67 confrontation, I would put it well below something like Gosetsu holding up the Doma castle, or Chiffon dying.
Sure. Yes.
Or what happened at level 67 in Shadowbringers? That was around the well. Oh, that was the trolley shit in the well, but something big happened there. That was with Minfilia. After having gone through it halfway point and like starting to see how this future interactive stuff is sort of maybe not hitting me the way I wanted it to hit me when I first saw it in the live letter and stuff, I was like, oh no, I'm not gonna care, am I?
That's interesting. I want to talk more about that when we get to our next week's episode.
Yeah, for sure.
Getting back to stuff that happens here, one thing worth calling out here is that Zaraljah does originally get defeated. He dies, and then a little thing on his head like starts rebooting him like he's a Windows machine that's being recovered from CrowdStrike. Hey-o! And
sick.
And I actually, I made a prediction here when I saw this, that then I've walked back softly, having seen more of the game since then, but I'm not letting go of entirely yet, which is Zaraljah actually being kind of puppeted? Is someone else's consciousness sort of controlling his body and pretending to be him via this thingy on his head?
Yeah.
And we will find out if that is the case or not, I think, before the end of the expansion.
Yeah.
Anyway, Galuljah dies, gets to have a long goodbye scene with Wuklamot, and that happens here, right?
Yeah, no, it does. It's certainly long is a word.
Okay. Yeah, anyway, he dies. We get back out. We spend a lot of time with the people of Tuliola.
Yeah, we sure do. And hey, the music is, this part's not so bad because the music is like somber, but we're recovering from this attack from this foreign nation, right? Mm-hmm. And I noticed the weather was just like cloudy, and I was wondering if that was just because for some reason ever since we started Endwalker everything is always cloudy all the time, or if this was a scripted event. And it was a scripted event, and the scripted event was ominous clouds. Like, thanks for telling me that these clouds are like, I just call it clouds and let them be ominous, game. Fuck.
It's
getting mad.
The problem here is that, like, because we spend the first half of the expansion going lots of other places and not really spending much time in Tuliolol.
No, that's been a blessing. What are you talking about?
Well, yeah, but the point is that now that we spend a lot of time here, like, it's not really earned. Like, we don't have a connection to these people or this place that much, and so we spend a lot of time here helping them recover. But it's like, yeah, but like, I don't know.
What do you mean we
you.
Spend all that time talking to that one dude?
We do.
The
sure,
one,
okay.
that one, the goldsmithy dude. And I think maybe if you were not like me and you actually did the role quests, which are slightly have a slightly interesting premise, but I'm skipping them. you know, because of time, then maybe you did spend a lot more time in Tuliolo. Maybe other people did.
Things that jump out at me here include Wiklamat being understandably upset that this happened and that she could not save her people, but also, like, you've been Dawn Servant for like 3 days. Like, you've barely had time to adjust.
Already failed.
You've barely had time to adjust the military spending and weapons research sliders, you know? Like, get in there SimCity style, start like diverting more money to the to defending the borders. But and also, she takes Zeral Jah's transformation a little weirdly in stride. She doesn't seem that shocked that he's a big bloodthirsty monster. And I'm like,
this
I didn't
game
think
doesn't
he...
know what to do with the relationship that Wuklamat and Zeral Jah have.
Yeah, and like I didn't think
I
he
think
had
Kona
this
and
in
Wuklamat
him.
Wuklamat feel like siblings, but Zeral mm-hmm. Jah is like not. There's just nothing. There's no. What is this supposed to be?
There's a version of this in which he still can kind of be the one of the three siblings that was the more standoffish and more aloof, maybe a bit older. But like, I think I'm missing like one good childhood memory of the two of them, like having something happen together, you know?
Yeah.
One sense that, like, that they grew up with each other.
Yeah, that doesn't, it really doesn't feel like they did to me. So that's a good point to bring up, is that we have this echo thing, and the only one who gets an echo vision of Zeral Jah at any point in the game is Krile, who we love. Oh, and we'll have to talk about later. But she has it sort of off screen, and we're like, and she just sort of tells us that, oh, that's bad. He's a bad person. Like, okay, I'm being told that he's bad by this game.
Mm-hmm.
And he
But I also thought he wasn't. The way they were setting him up, I was like, is this guy kind of complex? Is his relationship to war like this weird sort of fucked up thing that has like a weird like psychological dimension to it? And seemingly not so far.
Like Xenos?
Yeah, like is sort of, but seemingly not so far. Seemingly he just was happy to just be like, and now I have my cyber army and I'm just going to lead, I guess. Whatever, we'll get there. I've not gotten to the end yet. We'll see when I get to actually confront him what he says.
Well, I mean, yeah, but you could say what you think. You're allowed to be wrong at this point before you know what actually happens, right?
I am surprised at this turn. I mean, I guess we're going to find out it's been 30 years for him or whatever, but even still.
Yeah, sure. I don't know. I don't know if I was surprised or not. I'm like, well, something has to happen at this point. And I'm finally excited. I was like, yes, things are happening. That's what I was excited for. Things were happening at level 67.
They certainly were. Okay. Next thing we learn. Krile and Ystola and Grahatia show up. And we learn things like the fact that Krile is from this other world, which is the lightning reflection.
Yes. So, well, we learn that Krile, here's what we learn. We deduce that she's from this other world because we get, we're finally, you know, talk to Kulu Jah Jah about this thing because the contest is over. And he says, hey, by the way, when we saw the original City of Gold, it opened for us. And we had the key because it opened for us. And it was given to us by people that came from the other side of this portal. There were two, not Lala Felon, they have their own word for it. As if we needed more proper nouns.
I know.
I don't remember, and I'm not going to learn it.
But
this
Jerome,
point.
They're named after different types of stone.
Cool. So they were, and they dropped a child, and then Galuf raised that child as his own, and we were like, holy shit. And I had the question here, hey, if Krile is from this other world, and then this other world, by the way, is a reflection. We also learned that.
Yes.
So coming up. Check.
I have so lost this prediction contest. It's not even funny. It's gonna be like 7-0.
Wouldn't her soul be thinner? Wouldn't Ystola have picked up on that a while ago?
Oh yeah.
Interesting. Well, the expansion's not over yet. Perhaps there's a way this resolves itself, or perhaps it was oversought. I don't know at this point.
Is this gonna be some Kingdom Hearts shit? Oh god, we can't know. Okay,
of course
okay.
It is. It's Square Enix.
Anyway, okay. Wuklamat wants to give a rousing speech to all the people, so we gather everyone up. At this point, while we're talking about needing to like go and confront Zeral Jah, Alphino like gets in front of the crowd and is like, having traveled your lands and gotten to know and love your people, we will help you out against this formidable enemy. And I couldn't help but finish saying in my head, if we had just met you, man, you would have been like, shit out of luck. We just wouldn't have cared at all. But, you know, now that we know you, we're definitely going to help out with kind of the subtext here is we're only going to help you out because we like you.
Not because this is a threat to all of us.
But this also is a bit where I'm like, the speech that Wuklamat gives is fine, but she's addressed the crowd twice in like 15 quests now.
Yeah.
Like,
It's really fun video gaming that we're having right now, watching Wilkelmott talk to people. The game. Cool. So we at some point devise a strategy to hit them right back, though.
Yes.
Because Zeralja just sort of leaves and he's like, I would kill you right now, but I don't want to.
I don't understand why.
Maybe we'll find out. Maybe it'll be just like a Xenos thing where he's like, hey, where, you know, Xenos was confusing at first, right? He left us alive.
Sure.
But okay. He also said, live to us. You must live and get stronger. He was also very clear about why he wanted us to stay alive. It was pretty cool.
Okay. We, a genuinely cool sequence here. Our plan is to drive the steam train directly at the dome and crash it.
Hell yeah.
It works. It.
Perfect. Great. Cool. Yeah. Thank you.
It comes together really this quick was, and it works.
This was probably my favorite part of this whole expansion. That train heist sequence was sick. Absolutely sick. We all get on top of the train and are just magicking and shooting down these cyber soldiers in the air as we drive this train bomb into the thing. Wilkelmott has to abandon piloting the ship and jumps up to the top and leaves Arenville to do it. And the look he gives her as the camera pans into him
is
solid gold. Solid gold. This sequence was pretty exceptional. Really could have done with Thancred firing a cool laser gun, though.
Yeah, he should have. He really should have.
That really should have happened. I was rooting for you there.
Weird, like, lack of supporting cast involvement. Like, this really is like the Wilkelmott and Alfano and Alice show so far. And I'm realizing
not even them. It's the Wilkelmott and Kryle show.
Basically.
Alfano and Alice are basically just Final Fantasy 16 Jill. They serve to ask questions and say where we're going.
I ask
questions about what we're supposed to do and where we're supposed to go do it.
I am... You know, I was looking forward to this expansion, maybe like focusing on the main cast a little bit less. But now that we're this far in it, I'm like, no, I want more Thancred. Give me more.
Yeah, this
like Rod Tia do stuff.
We did not. If other people thought the same, they did not know what they wanted.
Uh-huh.
And I am. Yeah. Well, yep. I was excited to learn more about Kryle, and I was excited to learn more about Arenville. And I was open to liking Wilkelmott. I think she's still, again, likable. And I think her hero's journey thus far has made sense and is well-crafted and well-acted and well-received. I just think the context... I just think that she just kind of fell out of a coconut tree. She does not exist within the context of everything that came before her.
I like Wilkelmott as a character. I am still skeptical of her suitability for the role of Dawn Serpent.
Well, but... good thing she put Kona on the cabinet.
Yeah.
Because that's the one that should definitely is the actual leader.
Okay, anyway.
He stays behind, which I'm like, makes sense, but god damn it. God damn it. We're not getting any more Kona this expansion.
This sequence also takes us into our dungeon for the section, which...
Oh, slaps.
Dungeon's great.
Yeah,
really
Vanguard.
Good great boss fights.
Absolute slapping, dodging lasers,
mm-hmm.
the wall stuff, and
Snake Man,
super excellent, cyberpunk gear, all good stuff, great stuff, fantastic gameplay. These are really excellent dungeons that are probably a lot of fun to run over and over again for your roulettes. So do that.
Looking forward to that bit.
Awesome. What we breach the castle. We break Vanguard. We see the guy. The big takeaway from the Vanguard is that there's this other guy who also has the little thing on his ear, and he uses apparently a whole lot of souls to transform into a beast.
Into a
what?
Beast?
Are they using beast souls too for their weird soul transformation?
What is this, a Mega Man Battle Network game?
What is this, a Primal?
Yeah. Oh shit. Maybe. Okay.
Maybe. I don't know. Kind of feels like it feels creation magic like, but it's different.
We'll see. Okay. We'll get there.
We arrive in the new zone, and the new zone is called, do we actually know the name of it right away? But it's called Heritage Found or something?
Yeah, sure.
We know it's Heritage Found, mm-hmm. from the live letters and stuff. And it is completely abandoned.
And fully cyberpunked.
I mean, yeah, in the sense that it is the Badlands section of cyberpunk, but also people lived out in the Badlands. Nobody living out here.
Sure, right.
This is it's completely... We arrive at, I think, Yasulani. This one I remember because they say it a lot. Yasulani Station. And it
right,
looks as
yeah.
if Yasulani Station has been abandoned for the greater part of, you know, a couple of decades.
Which, this is where I was like, oh, okay. Time fuckery.
I was very interested in this because there was finally, like, a mystery to unravel.
Yes.
I think you know, Shadowbringers and Endwalker benefited a lot from having a mystery to unravel at the start of the expansion. Endwalker with the towers and what the fuck that was. Shadowbringers with the call and what the fuck that was.
So,
and I think also Heavensward had a really good lead in too, where it was, where we were like, I don't know what the fuck happened to the rest of the signs of the Seventh Dawn. Where are those? Like, where's the mystery? Whereas this is where it clicked for me, that it was like, oh, the first half of this expansion was missing that sort of mystery. It had the Golden City in it, I guess. It did lead up with the Golden City being a mystery. But why didn't I care about that? I don't know why I didn't care, but I really didn't.
I'm going to lay this out here now because it's going to apply to a bunch of stuff we're going to talk about from here to the end of the episode.
Yeah.
Which is that we're going to get a bunch of mysteries from here on out, basically about how like this civilization works and how the technology works and stuff like that. I think they kind of fumble it a bit, though, because the problem is that the answers to the mysteries they set up are extremely obvious if you've ever read, like, one science fiction book or watched, like, two episodes of Star Trek.
Yeah.
And so when you immediately know what the solution to these science fiction mysteries is...
The solution 9.
Yeah, it's like... Either you need to actually get to the answer being revealed in game, like if the mystery isn't going to be actually mysterious,
you need to
get to the answer quickly so that then the rest of your time can be spent dealing with the consequences of that.
Yeah.
And instead we're going to spend like 12 quests just very slowly running around and learning things. And I'm like, yes, right. The souls go in the cloud. I understand what this means. Oh, people's memories are getting erased. Yeah, no, I've got it. Oh, the people are going up there. Yeah, I've watched Soylent Green. I know how this works.
Yeah. It's pretty still the mystery is exciting, but it is dampened a bit by the fact that we are still just going around talking to people the game. I'm so sorry to harp on this, but the game keeps harping it on me.
Yes. A few things to note here. As soon as we get inside and start looking at all the giant buildings, including the big tower in the middle, everyone is like really confused about how it all got built so quickly.
Yeah.
And I'm like, last expansion, like, enormous towers went up all over the planet hours.
This was Ace Attorney levels of stupid in a bad way. Like, it took them so long to realize that this was another Crystal Tower thing, which is something I said, like, right away. I said it before the game came out. Like, I said, like, oh, that's right, yeah, for no, sure. Like,
this is a real problem. It's a real problem. Like, when the players or the viewers or whoever, the readers or whoever, are immediately guessing the answers to things that the characters...
I haven't,
taking forever to figure out.
Documented that I said it Crystal Towered into existence.
It's so frustrating to be so far ahead of the main cast.
Writing is always a fine balance, and there, you should be able, any reader or consumer of your media should be able to guess what's happening with your media based on the clues that you're leaving behind. It should be foretold, but it shouldn't be foretold so far that they get bored by the time the answer comes out. Probably just repeating what you said, but I think it bears repeating. We also meet this character finally in earnest, who was present at the bombing of Tulliolal. Sveen. So this is when I realized that I was an idiot. However, so Sveen is another gem. And Sveen is a name for a gem, and there is a character in Final Fantasy IX named after a gem.
Oh.
Her name is Garnet, and her alias is Dagger. And what I said in the episode was, man, fuck, maybe I should guess Dagger.
God damn it.
Damn it. But it's fine because it's not actually Dagger. It's the reflection version of Dagger. I wasn't close. I said Iko. I was wrong.
Okay.
But like, I was wrong, and then I was like, this can't possibly be Dagger. And I still kind of hold on to that, and I'm glad they didn't actually call her Garnet, because Sveen is a little bit different, but she is in fact the Queen of Alexandria.
I'm gonna stake something out here.
Yeah.
I don't like Sveen. In fact, I might dislike her.
She's pretty creepy.
She's
creepy, and she's a people pleaser.
Exactly. She is. And I'm really like, are we really just gonna uncritically do the whole like, oh yes, of course.
Of course she's nice.
A proper ruler cares for her people. It's like I'm sorry. I know I'm such an anti-monarchist about this stuff.
No, but like Wu Klamath just competed against two people who could have been rulers that very obviously did not care about their people.
Uh-huh. Sure, sure. And, like
it, come
it's,
on.
It's meant to set up Wuklamot against Fiend as, like, sort of, like, you know, a contrast. They're, like, they're mirrors of each other. And, in fact, even Wuklamot being so sort of, like, you know, personable is leading her, I think, to sort of, like, be taken in a bit by Fiend in ways that are causing her to maybe not ask all the questions that she should. That is kind of happening. I'll give them
and,
that.
And us being sort of a puppet character for a player that no longer has any
yeah
agency.
No, that's the bit I'm pissed about.
We're not like we've done this as a Warrior of Light, and I think I don't know, but we are also, I think the Warrior of Light is also like the kind of person that just is interested to see how things play out on their own. Remember when we went and helped Yugiri attack Xenos against everyone's wishes? I think the Warrior of Light kind of does canonically have a bucket of rocks for a brain.
Sure.
So maybe I'm not so mad about that. It makes sense that they would just sort of stick around and see how things play out just for the sake of it.
There's a bit here where Alice says it's only natural for a ruler to love her people.
It's,
and I was
so
like,
not.
Alice, no.
It's so. Oh yeah. There goes, I forgot about that.
There goes my.
Oh no, Alice
the anti-monarchist prediction.
Alice is fully sucking on the crown. She has the crown jewels in her mouth and down her gullet. She is all in on the monarchy.
Alice, what?
I'm so sorry, because I thought that prediction was pretty plausible, but no, this game doesn't want to do that anymore.
Sphene is the ruler of the people here, including
Alexandria, by the way,
of Alexandria. Yeah, which is that going to be a thing? Is this or is this not in some way linked to the fucking Alexander robot? I
think thematically, yes. I mean, the time travel, right?
Okay,
already,
but like not explicitly plot based though.
Maybe.
Okay. I wasn't sure if that's some like weird like reveal in like the last five quests or whatever.
Man, I would love to see Jervon Shit just pop out with the horn again. Could you imagine?
Anyway.
It was me. I would fucking love that.
Sphene, ruler of Alexandria, which is mostly this giant cyberpunk city and this big old tower, but also has incorporated the people who lived here when the worlds got overlaid, including Aaronville's family and friends from when 30 years older.
So this society did in fact Crystal Tower in, but at a much larger scale. It wasn't just the tower, it was the land that comes with it.
Pretty much,
right? So we meet up, and we also meet some of those people that exist here, including Namika, who was swept up in this time vortex and is at the very end of her life.
Oh, Wuklamot's grandmother?
No, Wuklamot's effectively mother, nanny,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Basically mother, but not the person that sired Zoral Ja. We never meet that mother. I really want to know who is getting freaky with Galul Jaja, not expecting to get pregnant. And then just like, damn it, you're supposed to be sterile. I was supposed to get my muscle growth kinks off with you.
The whole point is that you're supposed to have like a natural vasectomy. What happened here?
And two heads.
Whoa, yeah, actually, you can do a lot with two heads.
The front and the back.
You could
at the same time. This game, I think, reasonably shies away from the gory details, but that's what Stormbud's all about. Really diving in and getting into those things that the game will not talk about. Oh my god.
Wuklamot's nanny
Wuklamot's
is now
nanny.
An old lady, and she is ready to die.
Yes, and she pretty much dies. Wuklamot tries to speak to her, and she barely recognize
it. She gets carted off Soylent Green style to be taken inside, where she'll be taken care of. And I'm like, where she'll be taken care of?
Where they're going to eat her, pretty much. So we watch her die, and then we watch as everyone's everyone in the town's little bleep bleep bleeps go
little brain
go flip, and then everyone suddenly acts as if they've never met this person in their life. Isn't that weird?
Yeah, it's weird that they erase the memories of people after they die.
Yeah, and I don't know. I think everyone in the Scions is like, that's kind of fucked up, actually. This is weird. They're like, oh no. They store their memories for later use so that they never die, which is like the whole Yuktui belief system coming back and hitting us.
Yep.
Like a train hitting a building.
I am so proud of the fact that I called like the utilitarian theme stuff going on when I was like, Wuklamot, this is how you get to like storing brains in computers. And here we are storing brains in computers.
And 100% is how we are storing brains in computers. You did it. You certainly called it, and I'm proud of you too.
I feel like even though I'm going to lose our contest, I should get a couple points back for some of these impromptu ones.
Absolutely not. No, what the fuck? The game is telling you these things are happening by showing them predictions to you.
Okay.
Like, you can't predict things that the game is trying to thematically show you.
Okay.
You can be right. You're allowed to be right, but that's not the point of those damn things. Anyway, yes, everyone basically forgets. The science states fucked up, but then there, but Bukumatsu's like, maybe we shouldn't judge other people's cultures and stuff. And it's like, no, this one we can judge.
Yeah, no, this is which, this is a bit, which again, I like that. Like, I think this is deliberate, right?
Yeah,
deliberately they'd be like, oh, Bukumatsu, you learned some valuable lessons from like the first half of the expansion, but maybe they don't all apply here.
Yeah, no, maybe you can't just talk your way out of this one, and maybe we can't just coexist with these people that are going to that are treating human souls like currency. But we get up to Solution 9 is pretty cool. What do you think of Solution 9?
It's very cool. It's very empty.
It's really hollow. It is not Night City because it is so hollow.
It's,
I feel like Kugane, bustling,
yeah,
lovely. Crystarium, kind of stiff, but like otherwise still pretty cool city with the whole systems. Solution 9 hits wrong for me. And
major
I'm kind of
lack,
sad about it.
Real lack of NPCs, I really think. Like, just like people there, wandering around, people eating, people like having
like
conversations.
There's like the True View section, which is kind of cool. A little bit more dense, has that bar in it.
Yeah, but that's like one third of this whole space.
Yeah, most of it's pretty hollow and pretty empty for a civilization that's supposed to be super advanced. Like, there's some people walking around in the cutscenes, but otherwise, there's like the little one little stand in one place and then the crystal and then the other little stand. It's a pretty set piece, but otherwise kind of empty, kind of similar criticisms I have for Final Fantasy 16, which I do have that whole Solo Buds episode on if you want to hear about.
We skipped something.
Oh, of course we did.
We skipped meeting Oblivion, the resistance movement.
Oh, we did meet them here?
Yes, we meet them before
we get
to
Solution
9.
Oh, this is great. I thought it was after. Yeah, so we meet Oblivion, and this is really interesting. We meet a robot who claims to be Arendelle's mother.
Yeah, and talks just like your mother.
Oh my god. Oh my god. Oh my god. I'm sick.
She opened her mouth and then she starts calling him Bun Bun, and I was like,
no. You're so right. Don't say that.
I meant it in a positive way. I like your mom.
Yeah. Well. Okay. Great. Cool. Yeah. That's my mom, I guess.
Okay. So Sphene apparently. So Sphene directed us here. She apparently knows about this resistance movement.
By the way, I love my mom too. That's not why I'm sick. Oh man, it's just like having played through the whole game, not realizing myself. I was like, man, I really like her. She's cool. She's really relatable for some reason.
Okay. Anyway, it's a resistance movement that lives underground or like in hiding. They're led by a bubble robot that claims that it's Arendelle's mom. Their name is Oblivion. Their original mission was to stop the fusion of the two worlds, but they failed at that, obviously. So now their new mission is to take down Zeral Jah. This is also where we learn about what the little Bluetooth headsets actually are. They're called regulators. They store extra souls, which allow people to revive after death, but not from aging or natural causes, only if they die, like, violently, I guess?
Mm-hmm.
Which is... I have a question. Like, the whole currency of this world runs on soul replenishing, and I'm like, how often do people die violently that this is a concern of theirs? Because, like, I don't...
Yeah.
Anyway, like, we'll get into it later, but...
The theme music for the Oblivion Hideout is also a remix of a Final Fantasy theme that is... in Final Fantasy IX, obviously IX is a big theme here. Alexandria is the prominent... The first city... in Final Fantasy IX. So if you're familiar with Final Fantasy IX, you're going to get a lot of the allusions that Alex isn't going to get. So I'm interested in his perspective on all of this content, given that he is not familiar with the themes of IX. But this one in particular, I want to shout out as a stroke of brilliance from Soken, because this is the theme of Tantalus, the roving band, the roving troupe of a theater The theater, roving theater troupe that Zidane is a part of, but it is a front of for thievery, and it is a front of which for which we go and abduct Princess Garnet.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that, sure. Okay,
and it kind of tracks. Here. It gets some parallels. So, and it's a yeah, it's lo-fi beats to abduct a princess too, basically. and it's an excellent, it's probably my favorite theme in the entire expansion, but and an expansion full of some fucking bangers.
Yeah,
Sogin did a pretty good job most of the fucking time. Anyway,
last lore bit I'm gonna hit here, this is where we learned the way that regulators work is when people die, their yeah. memories and their souls are split. Their memories are stored in the cloud and their souls are recycled and, like, you know, fed back into, like, regulators so that people can have a store of extra souls so that they can come back from death. And I was like, doesn't this mean that, like, wait, but isn't this the whole, don't souls also have some characterization? Doesn't that mean that people are getting all kinds of, like, remixed in terms of, like, everything? What is this game's theory of mind yet again? But I also think we're gonna do more with that because it sounds like the whole soul mixing technology is, like, a thing we're gonna
soul
have
and
done
memories
with.
Yes,
yeah, okay,
there's also we'll more there. There's also more that we didn't get into with the Endwalker Raid series about the characteristics of a soul that you should probably go back and visit at some point.
Okay,
when you're bored of running the same dungeons over and over again, to go do the Pandemonium raids.
Okay.
That'll be interesting, and you can report back to us on that. I think a lot of buds will be really interested to see your opinion on that stuff. But we've been too busy to do that, so
okay.
Whatever.
Last thing before we get into Solution 9, really quick here, we get a scene where Sveen and Zeralja are talking, and Zeralja is berating Sveen and saying that when her realm was on the brink, it was his power that she needed, which is interesting. But Sveen herself seems to be legitimately a kind person who wants the best for her people, which is really boring. So anyway, mm-hmm. Then we get to Solution 9 and we get to wander around inside.
Yeah, that whole cutscene existed. We walk around. What is there anything else that happens here? Because I'm kind of done emotionally talking about this damn chapter.
Let me skim my notes here really quick. I have a note here that says this expansion has a real pacing issue. Why is there like 2 hours of other gameplay between the reveal about memories going into the cloud and any kind of follow up on that?
Yeah, I agree.
There's a bit here where we try the food. Whatever. Note in bold. Why are we just credulously swallowing this propaganda tour? I was like,
I agree.
The Alexandrians have universal housing, which is cool, I guess. But
oh yeah, the apartments were sick.
Everyone's on the first name basis with the queen, and we go visit this random child who has various disabilities due to being imbalanced with his lightning ether, which is an illness that people have. I'm just reading stuff at this point.
That part I remember, and then I remember thinking that sounds a whole lot like tempering. Is anyone going to figure that out in 2 seconds and then offer a cure for it?
Oh, shit. Oh, I didn't even think of that. And I was like, okay, new theory. This is actually functionally a socialist society where everyone has access to all the food, housing, and shelter they need. And Sveen is a naive idealist because all of their problems have been solved for decades. And Zeralja just basically spotted a mark. And then my immediate follow-up note was, oh, no, it's not. Because you need to buy more souls with labor. And the soul economy seems fucked.
There's kind of a caste system happening.
Yada, yada, yada.
And it kind of does that with it and then nothing else. It talks, that's pretty much going to do it for our discussion of this. I wish there was more to discuss about this, but, like, I mean, this is already a pretty long-running episode.
Yeah,
at this point.
Is pretty much the end.
And this sort of series of quests basically serves to demonstrate that the people of Solution 9 are suffering and on borrowed time with their world, and they have a great need for something. Energy, I guess. I don't know. We'll find out more about that in our full recap next week. You're pointing your finger like you do because you want to say something.
At this ending point, I was like, okay, they've asked a lot of interesting questions. They don't have much time to wrap it up, but, like, yes. We'll see what they can do.
As
of this recording, I am 6 quests into the next, like, 17 quest section, and they are not using their time very well.
Next episode, we are going to just fully talk about Dawn Trail. We don't have any other things planned except for a couple of segments. One is we are going to plot out, we're going to chart a course for August. Very excited for that. And we are going to have a Charlayan forum segment.
Yes.
In our Discord, I've posted an at everyone, but a thread in our spoiler channel, where you can go and give your review and your opinion of Dawn Trail as a whole, what you thought, what you liked, what you didn't like. Because Honestly, so the Charlian forum segments are some of our favorite bits. I love interacting with our users, and you could join our Discord and contribute to that thread in the link of the description of the episode. If you want to support us, you could do that without spending a single pell in the ones column by just liking, rating the episode on your podcast platform of choice, sharing it with your friends, and leaving a review where reviews are applicable. And also, of course, continuing and joining the discussion in our Discord. Next week, full Dawn Trail. Excited to talk about it?
I'm curious.
I'm looking forward to talking about it. I'm so far, you know, but what we've seen of this expansion and the story, I don't know if we're going to, I think the animation, I mean, I know the ending of it, but I feel like I'm predicting a lot of animated
conversation
about Dawn Trail. And I'm still recovering from what you said about Kakiwa. That's how you say her name. Kakiwa. That's hard. That's a hard pill to swallow. But I suppose until next time, I have been your host of Light, Jerome Robotsis, and I've been joined by my co-host of Light, Alexander Hambrock. Say goodbye to the buds.
Good evening.
Until next week. Bye. Burger King has came up with the I'm laughing because I just came up with this. Burger King is teaming up with the estate of Kentaro Miura to promote.
God, there are so many of these we could do. This is a gold mine. Sorry, keep going.
Burger King has teamed up with the estate of Kentaro Miura to promote its new. Fuck, how do I tie this in? This is going in at the end. Burger King has teamed up with the estate of Kentaro Miura to release its Berserker King line of burgers.